Hey, we're back here on the AdamStatmiller.com podcast with Christine Gard from Could You, a ministry that is shaping and changing Africa as a nation, and in particular, Mozambique. Christine, we've been talking in the last part of the interview about how you got your feet wet, but not realizing that they actually were getting set in wet cement. God took a little bit that you gave him and took you to the next level. During the break, which was kind of funny because I just pressed stop on my iPhone. But during the break, you mentioned that you got thrown into a room. You're what, 20-something years old, tell the story.
So,
bunch of gang members, right?
Well, so Ray really wanted, he kept saying to me, I want you to understand the privilege that you have growing up where you grew up and living the way that you lived, and we don't have that in the communities that are really poor in San Diego. And he really felt like the only way I would understand it is if I lived it. And so I had been also involved in a group that was a DeVos urban leadership group, and they were taking urban leaders, working with young people, putting us together with guys like John Perkins. And so we would say...
Who's John Perkins? Quick.
So he's like the grandfather of urban ministry.
Yeah, and so, right.
You know,
African American.
Amazing.
U2 does stuff with him.
And so we'd be 40 of us in a room for the weekend and listening to guys like that talk about how they need indigenous leadership, they don't need the great white hope, they need
right.
to, and how you can't catch it, you have to really live it. So we were encouraged to move into the neighborhood and understand, and shop there and understand from the inside out what the issues are systemically, and to be able to be a force to try to change that.
How far after your 30-day commitment did this move-in happen? Was it a couple years?
It was probably a year.
Wow.
Probably a year. And how I did that was I worked doing, at the time with the government, I didn't make a lot of money. And so I started to get a lot of volunteers and people to help us out, and I realized that there is some public housing that was at the border, and that I think there's like some clause where a community police officer can live there and they can kind of help patrol the policing of it. But no officer wants to go live in public housing on their day off, right? So I decided that maybe I could fit into that clause, and I remember I went and spoke to them and said, let me be the community police officer. And I said, give me, you know, a year to just live here and befriend kids and families and see if I can stop or curb the gang activity and the tagging and the whatever.
So he throws you in front of 100 Crips and Bloods.
So he throws me. So at one point he says to me, you need to understand. He puts me in a room with 100 Bloods and Crips, and he says, you represent white America and the system that put them here. And he left me there.
Did he say that in front of them?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, he didn't play around. He didn't
I guess.
Play around. And I had, so there was so much anger and everything about that moment, but they also had utter respect for him, so as a result, there was a sense that they wanted me to hear their depth of all of it. Like, some of the stuff that they'd been brought up in, and some of it was systemic and it was awful, some of it was poor choice, and some of it was, but it was a crazy learning curve. In addition, I remember once he said to me, you can't take your car to work today. And he was out in Market Street, but East San Diego.
Yeah.
And he said, you can't take your car to work today, so you need to take the trolley or the bus or whatever. Now, coming from San Ysidro up there, what could take 20 minutes in the car was going to take 2 hours and however long.
Sure.
But he wanted me to do that. And he also wanted me to get off in bad neighborhoods and go and walk around and realize the privilege that I had of avoiding those neighborhoods, but these kids didn't have that privilege.
Sure.
So he wanted me to be, so I would, you know, and he would meet me at the liquor store and pick me up. But in that process, what I saw was shocking and hard and awful and terrifying, and he was right. There was something about it that made my reality of someone trying to come in and help a lot more clear when you are someone who's starting to be afraid for your safety.
Right.
And you're, anyway, it was crazy, and probably today, if I went back,
you probably wouldn't do it again. It's funny. I don't speak on racial issues. Not that I'm not for equality and hope for all people and these things. I just realized that I don't have a grid to say anything mm-hmm. of substance, other than I'm sorry. How can I help? Like I grew up in an you know, all white neighborhood. Mm-hmm. We had three black kids in our school. You know, and I didn't actually even know the difference that they were black. Like I didn't. Yeah. There was no like. I don't even know how to explain it. I wasn't even aware that there was prejudice. I wasn't aware. It wasn't like our school was prejudiced. We just all went to school, and it didn't even make sense to me. And so even today, when I see what's happening in Ferguson and all these different places, I feel kind of helpless. I don't even know what to say. Do you feel like you can say something now?
Do you know what? Here's what I think. I think that I lived there 10 years. I spent.
Yeah, I guess you can say something.
And I did things like I ran for a local office.
Are you kidding me?
But it was not a big office. I mean, nothing that I do is ever huge, but it's also like, but I did run. I ran against the head of...
You are changing the educational system in Mozambique.
Well, I ran against the head of the Chamber of Commerce, and I wanted to...
Did you win?
I did win. I will tell you, there was some talk about recount because... I wanted to represent the local community and the young kids, the gang members, and I'd been there long enough that I really did believe that there were some systems and the broken things that were happening. And there was this group of kids who were able to vote. They were 18. And so I decided if they didn't know how to vote or they weren't encouraged to vote, that they wouldn't. So
you rocked the vote.
No, I drove my white van around and had set up places in town where I told leaders in the gang, hey, bring your friends, we register them, and then I drove them to vote. And so, but there was a point when one kid walks in and he's going to vote and he yells over in the voting booth, hey, what's that white lady's last name? And so I did win, and that's fair because they, you know,
yeah, did vote. It's guard, by the way.
It is.
Is that French? Sorry.
You know it is.
It is.
We're 100% Irish, though, as far back as we go.
Okay.
The French are somewhere.
Got it. Somewhere in there, yeah.
And so, yes. So I felt like I wanted to represent those kids and that community, and I wanted to give... I was so broken by the stuff that I saw. I watched kids. I went to funerals. We watched kids die from tagging or gang violence. But we also saw kids turn their life around, and we saw kids make commitments to... You can't want a better life if you haven't seen a better life. You are... If we don't help them... even access some of the things if we don't give them the tools that they need. And I also think that there's something about commitment, and I felt like if we walked alongside these kids for the long haul, we can save generations. So I felt like but they always reminded me. They always said to me things like, you can leave. You're here by choice, but you can always leave.
That's right, and that's the caveat, isn't it?
So there is. And so I would say this, in 10 years, it was a favorite season, the hardest season, and yet I grew the most, I learned the most, I saw the presence of God. I mean, I was doing things like, I'm a brand new Christian, waking up in the morning saying, maybe I'm 6 months in saying, or a year in saying, okay, I think I need to go meet some gang members. And so I would pray and say, maybe I'll go to the park. And I'd walk into the park, I knew no one, I'd pray a little bit, God would bring me into these relationships with some of these kids, and I would, with nothing but prayer and me, would start to build relationships, and I was never terrified. Like it was, I had peace like you wouldn't understand. It was beautiful. I remember, and yet they stole at the time pagers. They probably stole pagers from me 6 times. My car was stolen and
pagers. Used. You're dating yourself.
Yes. My car was stolen and used in a drive-by. They broke into my house. They did a bunch of stuff. But then there was a point when one of the guys came up to me and he said, "You're not leaving. You really aren't leaving. And I think you're here for the right reasons." And he was a leader of one of the gangs, and he said, "I have your back." And so at that point, there was this real sense that I was going to be taken care of, and they knew I'd go to court for them. And yet, if they stole from me, which once happened, I did press charges, right? Like, so there was this sense
justice.
Of, you know, there is, but I pressed charges and then I visited them in jail. Like, so there was this real sense of I wanted them to have.
Who's the gal that went to China? Jack went into the
oh, yeah,
I read
yeah.
the book. It's called Chasing the Dragon or something like
that's
that.
So, yeah, that's crazy.
Epic book.
True, yes.
Hey, we're here with Christine Gard on the AdamSetmo.com podcast, and we were talking to her about her organization called Could You, making dramatic systemic change in Mozambique in Africa, and the early part of her story. We'll be right back after this break.